It's wonderful, Denise, to be a part of your story. Our church says you found a church to come back to. That's great. I'm going to read from Genesis, a redacted version of this last part of the Joseph story. Joseph watched as his brothers bowed before him, begging that he spare the life of their youngest brother. The hard hearts they once had were softened by time and grief. He saw in his brothers a love and humility he had never seen in them before. Joseph's throat tensed and he held back tears as he turned towards his servants in the room. "Everyone leave me." So everybody left but his brothers. It was there that Joseph now began to weep. Tears streamed down his face as he turned to his brother and said, "I am Joseph. I'm your brother." He walked closer to his brothers, watching their amazed face. Is my father still alive? Please come closer to me," he asked. So they came near, fearful of what Joseph might do next. Joseph could tell they needed an explanation, for the last they had saw him, he had been shipped off for slavery. So now he stood before them, a governor of the most powerful nation in the world. "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into slavery. Please do not hate yourself for what you have done to me. God sent me here to preserve the lives of thousands of people." He explained to them how God had used him to save the lives of the land and all those who dwell outside of it. "So it was not you who sent me here, but God," Joseph said. Joseph then gave them an invitation, one that would change the course of human history. "God has made me Lord over all of Egypt," he said. "Come down to me and dwell in this land with me. Bring your families, your flocks and herds, and I will provide for you." And then Joseph fell on Benjamin's breast and kissed him. He then kissed all of his brothers and embraced them. And Joseph sent them on their way to fetch their father and their families. And when they arrived home, they told their father all that had transcribed. Jacob, who had lived in a days of grief and mourning ever since Joseph departed, found himself revived. His son was alive. So Joseph's father and all families made the trip to the land of Goshen on the outskirts of Egypt. And as they approached the city, Jacob sent Judah out to fetch Joseph. And Joseph immediately took his chariot to get out there. Tears fell off his face and blew into the wind as he rode towards the countryside. And then he saw this small dot out in the distance. And Joseph, as he saw that dot turned into the face of his father, he dismounted and ran towards his father and fell on his neck. The two embraced for a long while before speaking, weeping tears that they had held in for years. At last, Jacob could die a happy man. His family was reunited. Now there again is a Disney story, right? I mean, it's a beautiful story if it could only happen in our families. Eventually, all things merge into one, and a river runs through it. That, my friends, is my personal frame story. That's what drives me, those lines. Eventually, all things merge into one, and a river runs through it. In one of the churches I served, there was this, let me kind of explain this, there was this middle school principal who had retired. He had been 45 years. He had taught middle school kids, and then he was a principal for about 25 more. And so I was golfing with him, and I finally stopped about the ninth hole because this question was just burning in me. "Ron, how did you do it? I mean, how did you make it through 45 years of middle schoolers with your sanity? And you seem to have a joy in your step. What is it that made you get through that?" Ron didn't talk for three holes. He was thinking about it. What was it that got him through? And about the 12th hole, he sat down on the driving pad. He said, "They can wait." And he said, Do you want to know what really kept me going all that time? It was a belief that was instilled with me in me. I think it was in me from my baptism, and I don't even remember it. But I had pictures and I had stories. And I heard the words that we use over and over in church. You use them all the time when you baptize. These words, you are blessed, beloved, and a beautiful child of God. I don't know really many details of the Bible, he said, but I do know those words. And those are the words that have formed and shaped me all of my life. You are a blessed, beloved child of God. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter how long you're going to live, you are a blessed, beautiful child of God. Now, here's how it works in middle school, he said. Every time I get a look at all the names that are going to be in the middle school for the year, I pray over them, and I frame every one of those children that's going to come into my space with those words, John, Sarah, Jim, Sally, you are blessed, beloved, beautiful children of God. And you know what? He said, there are some days that belief, that framing is about as far away from the truth as possible. Middle schoolers can make some huge mistakes. There are years they go through, and you wonder if they will ever get to the other side and start living out that frame. But what I had to start doing was I had to start catching them being good. As early as I could in the day, I'd get up and be there as early in school doing, I just had to find them doing something good. And then going up to them and framing them right away. Wow, awesome. You just did something so cool. And listen, he said, some kids were an incredible challenge for me. But I made it a challenge for my life. I was going to catch them doing something good that day. And guess what, he said. Almost always I was able to do it. I found something. So that frame, he said, became for me an editing tool. It was my frame story. You are a blessed, beloved, beautiful child of God. Do you have one? Do you have a framing story? Because if you don't, I think you're in trouble. I think you're going to get lost. I think you're going to lose yourself when times get tough. You need a framing story. You need something, some word, some thought, some person to edit, use as an editor in your life. Some of you may remember the TV show Everyone Loves Raymond. I just love that show. And there's one scene, there's one particular episode that you should watch. It's when Raymond's brother, Robert, gets married. And listen, everything in this marriage, wedding, just goes to pot. Basically because of the mother. His mother is something else. I mean, she is always pulling strings, and the thing just absolutely collapses. And at the end, we're going to watch this scene where Raymond is giving the speech after the wedding, you know, the best man speech, and he uses a beautiful word, editing. Let's watch.
Well, I gotta be honest, I didn't know what I was gonna say today. Wanted to do a nice toast, but everybody does a nice toast, but I wanted it to be special, because it's a special day for my brother Robert and his new wife Amy. So, I didn't know what I was going to say. But then, sometimes material presents itself. Like today, for example, lot to talk about. But I think I can put a good spin on it. I think there's one thing that could make it all better. Editing. Yes, I think there's a portion of today's ceremony that we won't need to save on the videotape. Editing. You know, Robert and I, when we remember our childhood, we kind of use that technology in our heads. You know, we only remember the good stuff, like the food. Yeah, we don't remember when Mom would yell at Dad not to scratch his rear end with a spatula. In the bakery. Editing.
Yeah, editing. Look, folks, we get so much information coming at us in our world. And too many of us don't do any editing. And we don't know how to edit it. Not enough of us have a solid framework in which we can place all of the stories that come to us. We need a story to frame all the other stories. Otherwise, we're like ships without an anchor. In good times, we probably don't need it, let's be honest. But when the storms come, we need that frame. We need that story. Mine is eventually all things merge into one and a river runs through it. That river for me is God, that God's love, God's loving kindness, as David Orndorff would put it. Ron, the principal, framed his life with baptism. You are a blessed, beloved, beautiful child of God. The people of Israel had this story that we've been studying the last 5 years, 5 weeks, maybe feels like 5 years. It was their way of making sense of the world. It was almost like all things merge into one, and the river runs through it. God, it's that thread of love that just keeps pulling and weaving and working its way into the hearts of these brothers until they finally, you know, get back together again. Now, where was this story told? I'd like to have you think about just for a minute. And when did it become a major part of their lives in Israel? Well, I think if the answer comes in the next chapter of the book, Genesis, Exodus. And you know the Exodus story, I hope, where all of Israel was enslaved for over 400 years. What kind of stories can you imagine them telling around the fire when the Pharaoh wasn't around? Well, I can guarantee you it was this one. It was this beautiful story. Why? Because it gave them hope. Because it framed their lives, because when they got discouraged and couldn't get up in the morning, no, they had to do the same thing and the same whip was going to be on their back as the day before. This story told them to keep going. Don't give up. This story told them that God was somehow weaving a path forward. This story told them that their lives had some meaning and purpose, even if they couldn't find it yet. Kind of like the song Blessings, right? In one of the concentration camps after World War II, Americans freed thousands of Jewish prisoners, and in one of them there's this crude basement wall, and they found this writing on the wall. I believe in the sun, even when it's not shining. I believe in love, even when I'm not feeling it. I believe in God, even when God is silent. How could someone in that situation write this? The person who wrote it, we probably think, didn't make it. But they wrote it anyway. What kind of faith allows for someone going through the worst possible experience in the world to write this beautiful statement? A people who not only knew this story, the story of their people, but a person who knew Joseph's story. That's who wrote this. Who knew the power and the truth of that story. Even if it didn't turn out, it was still the story that brought hope. It was still the story of who they were. I believe in the sun, even though it's not shining. Do you have a story? Do you? Get one. Think of one. Look back into your heart and figure out what is the story that makes you drive, that forms and shapes who you are. You have a frame in which you can form and shape your children and your grandchildren's life into something full of hope, with strength and truth. Let me just tell you this, folks. Life goes fast. It zips on by. Things can get tough in a hurry. We need this story. We need the story of our baptism. The world needs to know that all things merge into one, and a river does indeed run through it, a river of loving kindness, a river of grace and forgiveness. The world needs to know not only our beginning, how we are beloved, blessed, beautiful children of God, but also our ending. And our ending is one where all things merge into one. I don't know. We have to be able also to identify these stories when they're being played out in our lives, right? I mean, we need to lift them up like, whoo, hey, wait a minute. That's a great story. This is a who I am right here. You heard me sharing a little bit about Emerson and going to the movie about the robot. And that story is that story of all those animals coming together is really right out of our Bibles. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion, the yearling together. And a little child will lead them. That's from Isaiah. We read it every Christmas season. When I heard that and saw that movie at that point, I started bawling. I started crying. Not because it was sad. No. That's not why I cry anymore. I cry because it's true. It's my story. It's our story. It's true to who we are. God is bringing everybody together. And there's a river of love through it. Last week, we had guests with us. They're with us again as well here this morning. And I wrote a little bit about this in my article, but I want to share it again. They were Carl and Jan, they come from Mill Creek United Methodist Church, and they have just moved over to Woodinville, partly because of their health, and they've moved into a retirement center here. But they have been to this church before. So we were eating last week, and they shared this story with us. They had come to a memorial service here. Let's see if I can get Scott, right? What was his name, Scott? Scott Young, Guyana Young's husband, who passed away about 10 years ago here. And the memorial service was here. And Jan was sharing with me that she used to be part of the Catholic Church, and she kind of left the Catholic Church about 25 years ago because of some of the women's rights issues and reproductive rights issues that she was struggling with. So she left the church, and she said she never got connected again. And so she had been out of the church for many, many years, and then she came to this funeral or this memorial service and hadn't been in the church very often. And during the memorial service, our church, we have a tradition of sharing Holy Communion at the end of worship. And the Meredith Dodd, who was our pastor at that time, had told the whole congregation that we have an open communion table, that you don't have to be United Methodist. You can be whoever you are and come to our table. And this is a big deal for United Methodists. It's a huge deal for me. If we get rid of that, I'm out. I can tell you that. It's important to me, and it was important to Jan as she heard that. Her heart was strangely warmed, and she felt like, wow, what do you mean? Because she was a part of a community that had a closed communion, that you could only come if you were Catholic. And so she felt like this is the way it really ought to be. This is the way God wants it to be. And it is, I believe with all of my heart, a big part of our story. So I want to thank you for that. And so she came and had communion, and it didn't stop there. She went home. Both Carl and Jan went home, and they went and looked for a United Methodist Church close to them. And the next Sunday, they went to church, and they've been going to church at the United Methodist Church ever since. Because that open table is a part of their story. They know that internally, that that is our story. You know, when we think about the end of life, there are a lot of jokes about heaven and hell. I'm not a big fan of hell. I am not a big fan of St. Peter's gate either, I might add. You know, we hear all these stories of St. Peter at the gate, and, you know, you come up and somebody gets in and somebody doesn't. I hate that image of heaven. I just don't believe that God's there at the end of our lives with like a button ready to push, you know, just eager to push that button so you can go down to hell. I'm a big fan of this word, that if there is a hell, Jesus is down there offering God's love and another chance. That's what I believe, but I really believe more. And I've been thinking a lot of this because of my mother. She's getting close to her end, or her new beginning, depending on how you want to look at it. And I'm wondering, how is she perceiving what's there for her when she dies? And I know she grew up in a real strict Catholic Lutheran understanding, and I know that heaven and hell, that hell thing was just burned into them. But I know my mom knows better, and she knows in her heart that she's loved. And one of the stories she told me, and I use this often, is the story of how an eagle teaches their babies how to fly. And this came from the Lakota people that we lived with in South Dakota. And basically the idea is that when a mother eagle teaches her young ones how to fly, she'll take them just at the right moment, put them in between her wings, and fly as high as she can. And then she will just gently just twitter her wings, and they'll fall into the sky, and they'll start flapping their wings, and everything goes good. They'll flap, and she'll fly next to them, encouraging them and encouraging them. But if they get too tired, if they can't fly anymore, does she just let them go cold to the ground? No. In all of her mercy and love and power, she swoops down and catches them in the palm of her hand or in between her wings. That's the image that I have for my mother. My mother has lived a long, beautiful life, but she is tired. And she can't fly anymore. But God is there, ready to catch her. And I hope and pray that that ending will inspire you to catch others when they fall. And all the people said,